Something tells me it's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it. I do believe it's true. At the zoo.
Can you imagine Paul Simon at the zoo? In the ancient history of domesticating animals, zoos have a strange role to play, I think. Part entertainment, part educational setting. The motivation for collecting animals in zoos was a way of showing off the powerful hunting and explorer culture of the 1800s by bringing live creatures to cities to be caged and viewed in a carnival setting by people who bought tickets. Royal menageries go back much farther in history. In our time, zoos preach a preservationist message that seeing living examples of species threatened in the wild will encourage the 175 million annual zoo visitors to contribute to conservation measures. Well, in the latest issue of Outside Magazine, contributor Tim Zimmerman argues that the time has come to recognize that zoos are no longer needed, that they're bad for animals, and can delude people into thinking that zoo animals signify growing populations rather than species nearing extinction.
Zoos, or public urban zoos, were originally created in the 18th century as a place where people could see animals they otherwise would never see. These days, that's no longer the case. You can see and learn about animals in many, many different ways, all the way from YouTube videos to PBS nature specials. In addition, zoos are intended to educate and promote conservation. But most of the studies that the zoo industry has done on this topic really ask people whether they thought they learned something rather than whether they actually learned something. And finally, what we definitely know is that the animals, and many animals, suffer in zoos. There's high mortality rates, there are injuries, there's depression. Lots of zoo animals and lots of zoos employ antidepressants. And in particular, the science and research shows that wide-ranging animals, which are really the animals that are most popular for people to see, like tigers, bears, polar bears, are the animals that do worst in the zoos. So if you put all those together, increasingly it's difficult, I think, to justify zoos as a place to keep animals for our personal observation.
Is any zoo doing this appropriately in any way?
There are many zoos which have really taken great strides to improve the enclosures and conditions in which animals live. The Washington Zoo, which I've taken my own kids to, is a leader in the zoo industry. But the fact is that certain animals simply don't do well in zoos. And no matter how natural the tiger enclosure is, for example, it's still minuscule compared to what sort of range a tiger in the wild would have to roam. And so I think you just run up against the hard fact that if you want to teach people about tigers and get children excited about tigers, there's maybe a better way to do that than to keep tigers in zoos.
What would you do with the network of conservation-oriented individuals who are members of, say, the Bronx Zoo that have developed a global community of people who really do support conservation? If you ended the zoo overnight, where would that community go?
Well, you wouldn't end zoos overnight, but I do think that conservation is really the best argument for zoos these days. The only problem is that no matter what the zoo industry says about conservation, that's not really its primary mission right now. So less than 1% of the types of species kept in zoos are actually actively part of serious conservation. I think that much more could be done by targeting specific species that really do need conservation, and maybe evolving from urban zoos to sanctuary style or larger parks where the animals would really just have a much more room to roam and better lifestyles.
Does it concern you that videos of animals in the wild could easily outlive the extinction of any individual species and give humans the impression, oh, that's okay, we got them on video, and that it's only that animal alive that really makes the point that extinction is different from just capturing an animal in the wild?
I think that that is something to think about. But what's interesting is that there have been studies done on how people think about conservation and the future of species in the wild. And one of the things that sort of research shows is that, in fact, seeing animals in zoos cared for by humans and hearing about zoos' conservation plans and reintroduction plans and breeding plans sometimes tends to make people think that animals are doing better in the wild. So there is, on the one hand, something special, of course, of seeing an animal live, although I would argue it would be better to try to see it live in its natural habitat. But at the same time, zoos, for at least a certain number of people who visit them, sometimes have those people leaving thinking that things aren't as bad in the wild as they thought when they entered the zoo.
What do you make of the zoo alternative that you could see at, say, for instance, the American Museum of Natural History, the taxidermological diorama alternative?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, a point that people who support zoos make is that there's no substitute for seeing an animal alive and up close, and that's how you get especially younger generations interested and excited in the future of species and conservation of species. But what's true is that the model you mentioned has been spectacularly successful. I mean, there's an idea that somehow it's right for everyone to see the animals they want to see when they want to see them. I tend, after thinking about these issues for a long time, to feel like it's a privilege to see animals live and it's a privilege to see them in nature. And, you know, not everyone can spend the money it takes to go to Africa, but certainly everyone gets outside. And I believe that the encounters that you have with whatever wildlife is in the natural environment that you spend time in are the sorts of encounters that are really important and can get you interested in the natural world. And those are the sorts of encounters that people should look for rather than the more unnatural encounters in zoos in which the animals really aren't necessarily doing very well or even living very natural lives.
Tim Zimmerman, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Tim Zimmerman is a contributor to Outside Magazine, and he doesn't have fun at the zoo, even when he takes his daughter. Are you on Tim's side on this one? Drew from La Grande, Oregon writes, I love zoos and being able to see all the animals I'd never otherwise be able to see, but I always leave feeling a bit melancholy about their captivity.
Hi, this is Mark Mannheimer. I'm calling from Bradford, Massachusetts. Having traveled extensively, I've seen some zoos that do a better job of housing their animals than others, but ultimately I feel it is more important and mindful of us to not cage or confine any animal.
The Bill, Little Rock, I think that zoos done correctly are a plus since there are several species that are preserved this way.
But preserved in a zoo, does that count as actually preserved? We'd love to know what you think. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to let us know if you would ever want to live in a zoo, the Chicago Zoo, the San Diego Zoo, the Bronx Zoo. They all look nice. Can't really pull the animals. Here's something to take with you at the end of the hour. There is a zoo you might go for at the University of Texas. Using 3D printing technology, scientists have created a tiny zoo with special enclosures just for harmful bacteria. The walls of the cages are 1% of the thickness of a hair. So it's really hard to get a lot of people in this particular zoo. It's a microscopic zoo for watching how bacteria behave in different environments, observing what they do in their enclosures rather than simply counting their growth rate. You put a bacterium in a cage and just watch it. Quote, on a size scale that's relevant to what a single bacterium feels and senses. Think about that. What does a single bacterium feel and sense? You can listen back to anything you heard on this program at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. And hopefully in this weather, you're not feeling like a zoo for bacteria. Get rid of those sniffles, won't you? I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.